basis. So although on principle, I have absolutely no problem with this encounter, but we understand that there are much more complex issues involved, and I would personally vote for it, that we explore it. That we do understand, though.
You are listening to the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting coming to you from the Union Hall at 305 West 44th Street, where Janice K. Bryant, allegedly a black woman, objects to black music being played on the air while we correct something technically, but makes no sound whatever when she hears a black woman described as a Nazi.
Over today and, or over the next 24 hours or so. Okay, whatever.
Next 12,
next,
hours.
Yes, well,
whatever.
Next 4
yes,
or 5 hours.
Before the end
but
of the weekend.
But to get together,
before
yes.
Before the end of the weekend.
Yes, and
please,
begin,
please.
Not try to resolve, but begin the discussion of those issues that are separating them. And come back tomorrow and just sort of give us a brief report on where they are. That's my motion.
Okay. Second.
Okay. Bert made the motion. Excuse me. No. Folks, please.
Madam Chairperson, can you get some
please,
order in here?
You must be quiet. You really must. Bert made the motion. Ray seconded. I think, again, the motion is that we're asking, we're encouraging, we're requesting the lab chairs and station managers are here to have a conversation this weekend and then inform us about how that went. Can we move right to a vote on this motion?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion, can we do this by hand raising? All those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. And all opposed to the motion, one, two, and abstentions. I think there was only one no vote and one abstention, and the rest were yeses, I believe. Again, this is a suggestion. We are not directing anybody to have any conversation. We're not ordering anybody. It's a recommendation, a request, a suggestion from this board that people do that.
Sam, will you do that?
Okay.
Will you meet with Lou?
Sure.
Will you meet with Lou?
I'd love to meet with Lou.
Okay, right.
Okay, great.
It's done. But I'd love to meet with
great.
You.
It's done. Thank you. Okay, are there any other items right now related
to that.
WPFW? Are there any other items related to WPFW? Because we are way, way, way over time now. So I understand that. We need to take a break. So what I want to suggest is that we break. I'm sorry. Don't say no. We are going to break. Or say no. Say no all you want. We're going to take a break now for lunch. And instead of a two-hour break, we're going to take an hour-and-a-half break to get us closer to being back on schedule. Can you let me finish?
Let the chairperson.
Let me finish. There are two committees that need to meet over lunch, the Executive Director Search Committee and the WBAI Committee. I believe an hour will not suffice. It will take 20 minutes to empty this room, until people get to sit into a room and have those discussions. It will be an hour and a half. We're not going to cut back on any of the allotment of time in the afternoon. I think we can maybe rearrange tomorrow's agenda. So the last agenda item on today, that is the gag rule question, will be moved to tomorrow. We would come back and start immediately with the Los Angeles station and then move into WBAI. We must... Okay, it doesn't matter. Okay, so at 2:30 promptly, we will reconvene. Could the people who are on those two committees just join us here so we know where everybody's going for those meetings? Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, folks. One other announcement. If you all out there want to hear this, that in the afternoon, people, please, in the afternoon, after KPFA, we're going to look at the WBAI situation. And again, there will be time for public comments. Madeline, where is Madeline? Where is Madeline who is taking the sign up? Folks, everyone be quiet. Madeline, come up here, Madeline, so people can see you. Madeline is taking the sign up for public comment during BAI. I want to let people know, though, we are on a tight time frame here. We have heard quite a bit from BAI folks this morning. So I really want you to kind of limit yourselves and select a handful of people, not dozens of people. Thank you.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
Morning Dew, a program exploring the music of Grateful Dead and related configurations, presents an original atmosphere of sound every week. Featuring live Dead, plus an extreme diversification in music from blues, funk, hip-hop, classical, folk, and indigenous roots. Commercially free in New York City and the surrounding universe.
Tune in to the Liquid Sound Lounge every Saturday from 6 to 9 p.m. with yours truly, DJ Jeannie Hopper, bringing you the underground music of the dance and DJ communities, globally united over WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City and streaming worldwide thanks to Porous.com. For playlists and how to submit material for possible airplay, log on to LiquidSoundLounge.com. Don't miss the show every Saturday, 6 to 9 p.m., right here at 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York City.
Well, this radio hasn't been working very well the past 2 days.
Peter, where do you live?
I'm glad you asked me.
It's a secret place. Please tell me.
All right, I tell you.
Now, will you tell me what happened on Saturday?
All Mixed Up with Peter Beauchamp.
When?
Saturday afternoon at 3.
That should be time for our favorite program.
Here on WBAI.
I should have been back here a long time ago.
Stay where you are, Peter.
Saturday afternoon at 3.
You would be getting an Albany.
You should tell me about things sometimes. You should stop spinning things on me all the time.
What would you do if I went off the air?
Thank you.
You're tuned to Whitelandia Pacific Radio. As the majority white board called the Interim Pacifica National Board makes its move toward purging black broadcasters at this radio station. Very simple. And the unfortunate thing is that black listeners, black supporters of one kind or another, the compradors, as we have described them recently, apparently will sit still for this. Just as they sat still, did you notice, those of you listening on the air, that when Mary Frances Berry, agree with her or not, was described as a Nazi, there wasn't a peep in the place? Well, of course, there wasn't a peep the night here that Bob Fass described one of his colleagues, a black colleague, I might add. Maybe that's the order of the day. Call all black people Nazis in an attempt to build a movement of some sort. Janice K. Bryant, the alleged black woman of the Pacifica Dissident Board, didn't make a peep. Black woman being described as a Nazi, Janice K. Bryant didn't have a word to say about it, right? But when we explained very clearly that listeners were calling us and saying they were not getting good reception of the meeting and complaining vociferously, saying that we were doing something to damage the possibility that they could hear the meeting clearly, from our station, Grayson Challenger went to the meeting hall to make an adjustment. I hope most of you noticed that the feed was much clearer, had a much sharper sound image after he got down there and made adjustments. Well, on the advice, instruction, whatever you like to call it, of our general manager, that no commentary be made during that period, you know, we put music up. All right? Rather than make the commentary, perhaps, that we will make now. All right, the reason Janice K. Bryant, who probably, you know, really gets very nervous when she hears black music played on the air, complained, you know, Clayton is over there playing music instead of, well, hey, you know, we made it very clear, the engineer in studio here made it very clear that we were attempting an adjustment called for by listeners who were telephoning the station. Now, my supposition has been that we're supposed to attempt as fully and as completely as possible to serve our listeners. Perhaps not. That's not the case. What we are supposed to serve, more specifically, are white folks standing up in a meeting calling black women Nazis. Not a ripple. All right? I'm listening carefully. I said, wait a minute. Somebody's... Not a ripple. Perfectly all right to do that. I mention this also because I find it fascinating that people spend so much time talking about two things. Free speech radio, which stops when the train arrives at my station. Okay? Everybody says, well, Clayton Brown is crazy. He can't be allowed to speak on the air. Free speech doesn't extend that far. Free speech at this radio station, as defined by the board, apparently, applies to white folks who can say anything they want at any time, along with their black compradors, who are permitted to speak on the instruction of their white masters. You know, go out there and tell them this. Go out there and tell them that. All right? Well, I want to be very specific about something. I was brought to this station not by Leslie Kagan, not by Carol Spooner, and most assuredly not by Janice K. Bryant, the person who brought me here. All right? You want to know who brought me here? Samori Marksman brought me here. And Samori knew who I was, how I was, what I was. And we had two very long meetings before I ever went on the air in this new time. You know, I've broadcast off and on at WBAI since 1967. But in this new time. So Maury Marksman sat down with me in two meetings lasting a total of about 4 hours and was very specific about why I was coming here. He knew what kind of broadcasting I did. He knew the kind of things I was prepared to say on the air. And he said, I want you on the air. Now, Janice K. Bryant doesn't know anything about that. And Carol Spooner doesn't know anything about that. And Leslie Kagan doesn't know anything about those meetings. And yet, they are saying now, what is this? Oh, something got stuck on my lip there. They are saying now, this is free speech radio, except when it gets to Clayton Riley. He has to be shut up. He has to be shut down. He cannot be allowed to speak. Mike Fader can go on the air, as he did last week, say pretty much anything he wants to. And he got a suspension. He will, if Fred Hershkovitz, as his way, was on the air last night demanding, you know, went to the general manager and I told him Mike has to come back. You know, white folks got one another's back. Now, when I get suspended, I doubt that anybody will have my back, anybody black or white, for that matter, because I saw a room full of compradors. If you don't know, ask, find out. I saw a bunch of them last night, including one in particular sitting on the board panel, ready to do anything, you know? When white folks say, jump, this person just says, how high? All right? And to sit there today complaining about the fact that there was music by black people, they have black people playing music on the air. And we are going to complain about that. We're going to make it known that we don't stand for that kind of thing. But a black woman being called a Nazi, that's perfectly acceptable. Nobody cares about it. He said, wow, hey. You know, maybe all of the... again, Bob Fass or Fob Crass or whatever he's going by these days, you know, is able to go on the air and describe a person, presumably a colleague, a black colleague, as a Nazi, openly on the air. Nobody said a word. So he wasn't suspended for that. That was perfectly okay. But I want to make something clear. As long as Clayton Riley is at a free speech radio station, Clayton Riley will express himself freely. The board isn't going to tell me what free speech is, and nobody else is going to tell me what free speech is, most particularly since there is a double standard at this station for free speech. People can go on the air if they are from Whitelandia and lie, distort, deceive all they want. Black person goes on and attempts to tell the truth, and right away say, well, that's where free speech stops. You can't do that. You can't say that. Folks talk to me about, you know, why we have to be cool. You know, why we have to temper our remarks. You know, everything will work out fine. We were too cool when Amadou Diallo was standing on his doorway looking at those four cops. We were a little too cool then. We were much too cool when Abner Louima was in that police precinct being brutally assaulted. We were very cool. We just shrugged our shoulders. All right? Patrick Dorimar on a street avoiding entry into a drug deal gets shot dead, and everybody's very cool about it. All right? Well, fine. Those who need to be cool and those who need to pretend that they're Winston Churchill are welcome to do that. But I say that some of us here understand very clearly from our veteran sensibility, from our seasoned existence in this field, that free speech isn't something you toss back and forth between the color of people. There's free speech here for the culture of whiteness. Let us be sure that there is free speech extended to all the cultures represented at this radio station. The simple fact is, my brother and colleague has come in and made this point very, very well I'm speaking of Jabel Fai, who has just arrived at the studio, that the simple fact is that we are locked in a war between the idea of who, or more specifically, let's say, which culture is going to assume and maintain power. Because that's what this is all about. Now you have a white majority board that is saying we are going to return to the years of the past. I'm always amused listening to these folks talking about the mission. The mission, when this radio station was established, it was a segregated enterprise, open only to white men. All right, now you can talk about Lou Heel all you want. I didn't know the man, never met him, never spoke to him. I've read accounts of his life. I don't know that any moment in Lou Heel's life was spent in a concern about the voices of black people at this radio station. And when we talk about how that came about, some of you don't even know the name Dolores Costello. Had it not been for her forming an organization then called the Third World Communications Vanguard, throwing it right up in the face of the white male superstructure, power structure, whatever you want to call it, that existed at the state. I was there. So folks can talk about history that they've read or heard about. I was there. I bear witness to how racist this station was at the time and how racist it is today. And maybe things have improved. Maybe things are a little better. But the fact is that without Dolores Costello, without people like Henrietta Taylor, without people like Pepsi Charles, all right? And you want to talk about how far back this goes. Again, we're talking about black women. We're talking about black women assuming responsibility and authority. And that is what sticks in the craw of so many people and the people who were at that meeting last night. Let's be clear about what is going on. Those of us who may not be here, let us at least leave you with a sense of the trap you're being drawn into. Because I tell you right now, when the purge begins to take place, those of you in full support of this whiteness of culture will find that you will be turned on in a New York minute. Those who are telling you now, oh, yeah, we have something for you to do, as long as you don't step out of your place, don't think you can run anything, we'll find a job as a subordinate for you. You can be a subaltern, but you can no longer exercise power here. White people are going to do that. And whether their names are Leslie Kagan, Carol Spooner, pick a name. They are the ones who are saying to you now, the day of white people exercising authority, of black people exercising power and authority, are finished, are through. You have one cult personality about to assume an almost religious conversion of this radio station, and that is Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! All of what you have been hearing in these past weeks has been about one person. Isn't it fascinating that the band and the fired have no names? You know, when you talk about the band and fired, they say the band. And, well, who are they? We hear very specifically about Amy Goodman, who has betrayed her fellows, it seemed to me. She said she wouldn't come back until all of them come back. She's come back. They aren't here. And in all likelihood, will not be for some time. Jabel Fai, you have some programming coming up in a few minutes.
Yeah, some program. You know, what is interesting about what you're going to hear in a few minutes coming from Rav Shonman, I'm pretty sure you may actually complain about the sound quality. And one of the reasons why the sound quality is bad is because one of the stations in California, owned by Pacific, refused to make the studio available to Rav Shonman. So we had to literally go find another station to work. Because, yes, indeed, a lot of you appreciate what he does. A lot of you are impressed about the fact that he's on the air. He's on the air because we put him on the air. Not because, let's say, someone invited him in a program and so on and so forth. The same people who are sitting out there telling you about free speech have censored many people, and Rav Shonman has been one. and he has experienced some very terrible situation in the first recording. One of the program was recorded at KPFA, and basically we could not even get a return call from one of these managers. And my point is, if this network is bound to basically stay as a unit, as one, they have to deal with the same people who are sitting on the board and sitting out there and pretending that this is a Pacifica board meeting. This is not a Pacifica board meeting. This is a WBIX's board meeting. That's what it is. Let's call it what it is. Go there and see for yourself. When you go, you see, you will notice that every single flyer or poster on the wall is about WBIX or some people who are taken out, especially Amy Goodman. And of course, you see many flyers asking for Bob Daughtry's removal and firing. And this guy is sitting right there in that room. And every inch of that wall is actually plastered with Bob must go. And why would we have to put human beings through this process? This is a torture. This is a torture, and the board, if this board is legitimate, the first thing they should do is to take those signs down. If this board is wanting to at least give a semblance of fairness, these are the first obvious things that they need to attack. This thing is a fallacy. They have taken over Pacifica, and to this weekend may very well be the last step of their takeover. And it is sad. This is not a Pacifica board meeting. That's a WBIX's board meeting. And they've been attacking people. They've been actually inciting people to do certain things. And the truth is, if you really care for this network and you care for fairness, you have to understand that what is going on at the local, at the restaurant union's local, is a trust. It is actually a betrayal of the mission, of Pacifica's mission itself. They talk about Lou Hill. Who killed him? How did he die? How did he kill himself? What did they put him through? How many times did they remove him from the same network? The same people who are sitting right here trying to teach us about Pacifica. And that is the problem we have here. So the program you're going to be hearing is a program that was recorded actually from a phone feed, because the dissidents did not want to make that studio available, this studio that we own. And mind you also that Ralf Schoenmann was very instrumental in the last membership drive. He made enough money for the network that had to actually, some of it had to be routed to KPFA to deal with their daily cash flow while they refused to raise funds for Pacifica. And these are the same people who are actually refusing Ralf Schoenmann an entry in that studio to do a decent programming for you. This is what we're dealing with here. Censorship, not free speech.
And you know, Jabel, what is saddest about this, and again, I will describe them as I feel they are, the compradors. So let's talk about black people who are going along with the program, obviously because they don't know how fast they will be dumped. You know,
but they dumped away, as you just said earlier, the band and the fight, yeah. All lumped into the band and the fight.
Yeah, and that's all they are. They're a faceless, nameless group of people.
Well,
Amy Goodman is very...
When's the last time you heard her name?
Well, it's interesting. She was at the meeting last night. Nobody even acknowledged her existence that I can remember. But Amy Goodman is very, very specific, yeah, as a figure in all of this. And if you say, well, yeah, we can figure that a white woman would be at the center of all of the efforts being made by a board now controlled by Leslie Kagan and Carol Spooner. Well, what else should we have expected? The point is, though, just as you've said, you pin it right there when you say a nameless, faceless group of people called the Band and the Fire have themselves bandied around. In this entire argument, we keep going, oh, what about the band and the fired? What about the band and the fired? Well, give them names. You know, make them specific. Make them whole. Turn them into human beings. Is it that so many of the band and the fired are black that you feel you don't have to give them at least the dignity of having specific identity?
Let me tell you one thing that happened to me yesterday. A lady came. She's very much part of the dissident group, and she's on a wheelchair. And she came to me, directly to me, yesterday, and looked at me and said, well, you look strong, so I need you to come here and help me for other people. I looked at her in the eyes, I said, you know what, I don't think so. I'm not going to do that.
Mm.
And what was startling there were so many more bigger white people around me,
mm-hmm,
that she did not point a finger,
yeah,
and say that you come and help me. And this person knows me.
Mm-hmm.
And this person came in here and did quite a bit of stuff. And my question, my attitude, what really amazed me, is say, wow, now I know what they need most of these Africans around. to carry the bucket.
The heavy lifting.
The heavy lifting, because they look strong, and that's what they do.
Exactly,
and, you know, one of the things also that startled me, at some point, Leslie Kagan, the interim chair of the board, said, oh, well, hold up, I'm like flooded with all these nuts here. Because you know what? The so-called dissidents are actually reacting to every presentation and writing questions and nuts to the chair, to the board.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what they're reading out, what they're saying, is coming from the same people who wanted to destroy the station and still bent on destroying the
mm-hmm.
station.
Mm-hmm.
If I see this so-called ban and the fight being so, agitated,
mm-hmm.
and every remark you make, you see them writing, turning pieces of paper, and
right.
they come and they hand it over to Leslie Kagan. And when she said that, you know, I have too many pieces of paper, I say, well, that's your script.
Well, you know, Jabel, what was fascinating to me is I came into the meeting last night, I saw a number of the band and the fired, and I never, throughout the time I was there, heard them specifically identified. It was as though, yeah, you're here, but you're not real enough to us to have any subsequent representation in our public presentation. This is, but you know, again, there's nothing surprising about this. There's nothing unusual about this. What you describe with the woman expecting you to lift her on your shoulders is in a sense the whole history of America. That's what black people do. They help white folks, or they abuse white
folks. No, I mean, sometimes I can understand if I was alone there and I say, okay, I'm the only able body, I would do the helping. But when I looked
mm-hmm.
around, all these big white people around who do
mm-hmm.
not want me to be around,
right.
and you're going to pick me to go carry the bucket?
Let me tell you very briefly a story. Good friend of mine who is a noted novelist was living then, at least, in Washington Heights. Now, this is a very striking-looking person, an extremely handsome woman, just in any crowd would be a stunning figure, right? She's at home.
You truly sound like she's that beautiful.
Oh, man. She's at home one morning in her apartment when the doorbell rings. And she opens the door to a white fellow standing there who is a vacuum cleaner salesman. And his comment to her is anybody home? Is anybody
home? Oh, and
home?
She opened the door.
She opened the door to her apartment where she lives, looked at this man, and he said, is anybody home? Well, you see, this has to do with the whole way. You know, we were talking earlier about the statement made by Edward Said, and I think, you know, we have people putting signs up, right?
Yeah.
Edward Said's comment about the relationship of Egypt and Great Britain was that Egypt exists only as Great Britain says Egypt exists.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the Egyptians have no right to self-identify.
No, they don't.
They do not measure up as human beings until the British say, well, we have decided that you can enter the human community at level 3.
Hmm. Well, you know, again, I think it's very important for the people to understand, and this is a statement coming from Jabel Fay again, that what's taking place at the local wrestling union is not a Pacifica board meeting. This is the WBIX's board meeting, and WBIX stands for WBAI in exile.
Mm-hmm.
And they go as far, even the notes, the simple statement they make is being suggested by the people who fought hard to destroy this station. So what it means then, if this meeting goes through just as it is, smoothly, by Monday, Lord know that they have taken over the entire Pacifica network.
Yeah.
Not BAI. BAI is
mm-hmm.
only one item in it. And also, what was appalling to see the local advisory board of LA and Houston come in there and talk. And then somebody kind of brushed me up and said, Jabel, where are the black people? Where are the Latinos?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the people in these local areas that they claim to represent?
Mm-hmm.
You don't see none. Every single body will come in there is a white person.
Right.
Hey, listen here. You know, I understand that in the race game, nobody wins. But the truth has to be said.
Yes.
And all that's being said right here is the truth. If you don't believe it, you go see for yourself. See for yourself. This is a mob, a white mob, to take over, running to take over Pacifica Foundation, and they have done so. And they have been directed by the same people who destroyed this network. And they sit there and complain about, oh yeah, we have $2 million debt and stuff like that. How did we get that? Mm-hmm. How did we get into that situation? Because they intentionally dragged this foundation into the court. They intentionally made this foundation incur some expenses that was not necessary as long as people were civil. And now they're going to come back and tell me that, well, you destroy, you know, you make us, you know, owe all this money. No, this is the dissident's fault. That's not Pacifica's fault.
Jabel, you made mention of something, and this should not pass. I hope those who were listening did not let it go unnoticed, but those of you who are joining us, Jabel made a very important point a moment ago where he said, look, Ralph Schoenman raised an extraordinary amount of money during our fund drive, and the Pacifica station in Berkeley, KPFA, refused during the same period of time to have a fund drive. So what happens? This board of Pacifica decides, well, the money we in effect raised has to go to pay day-to-day expenses at KPFA, which incidentally, it now turns out, I understand last night, has a secret slush fund where they salted away a bunch of money, saying they wouldn't send it to Pacifica, as all the stations are required to do.
Yet they were still picking in our bag. They were actually taking your money, our supporters, for the day-to-day cash flow with a secret bank account where they put the little bit that they raise. Mm. And this is basically what's going on here. And the truth is, whether they take over this network or not, it has been a great run. And I feel quite actually relieved that I went and seen for myself, because this is a mob, and you have to go and see. Please go there and see.
Well,
it's
Jabel,
305 West 44th Street.
Jabel, I feel very much in league with what you're saying now, because the point is, we arrive at a place. And I feel very strongly about this, and particularly in the work that you have done recently. We have let no one determine how we will speak here.
Oh, yeah, and that's what I love about it.
Okay, so whatever Whitelandia decides to do, we have made our statements and we've made it very clear. I hope some of you out there who listen to this radio station, and particularly black people, people from the Spanish-speaking communities, persons of color all over the city, will understand why we have spoken in the way we have, because this is just another example of what Malcolm was talking about when he described the capacity of people to be bamboozled.
This is Ralph Schoenman.
And Maya Schoen. Join us every Friday, 10 a.m. to noon, as we document the role of the U.S. government in instigating and orchestrating the events of September 11th.
Learn how the National Security Agency ran accused hijacker Mohammed Atta and his associates out of South Florida and trained them at U.S. military installations.
Find out how the anthrax planted across the United States has been identified as a weaponized military strain produced exclusively in U.S. government and military laboratories.
See how the pieces of the puzzle fit to form a picture of arbitrary rule in the United States, designed to whip the American people into fear-driven submission to virtual martial law. Taking aim will aid and prepare a fight back against a powerful few who have hijacked our country to advance their profits and to render their power immune to challenge.
Join us Fridays, 10 a.m. to noon on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. We'd like to, this show, tell you that we're coming to you live, actually, from our own offices. We hope to be able to reach you from a studio every week live. And until we do that, we hope you will excuse the quality of the telephone connection. We will get this all straightened out as soon as we can find a regular studio from which to broadcast. For those of you who have been listening to us in previous weeks, this is our third broadcast, and some of our broadcasts have been rebroadcast. We hope that all our shows will be available to you via tape. We're trying to set that up. If you haven't heard Taking Aim, Ralph is going to give you an idea of what we're doing today and what we'll be doing in the future.
Well, actually, Maya, what I wanted to do was to review some of the issues we took up in our initial programs, and we have attempted to center the data we've been presenting about the real underlying dynamics of the events of September 11th, the role of the United States government in instigating and orchestrating these events, the hand of the rulers of this society in creating pretexts for wars, wars that have been long in preparation, and wars which are inextricably linked to the operation of corporate capital in the United States. And as a result of that analysis, we've attempted to locate these events within a very precise structure of power. We've spoken about the Department of Commerce data, which shows that 2% own 90% of the national wealth. We've made reference to Robert Townsend, the former executive of American Express and Avis, with his analysis and data in his books, including Up the Organization, where he calculates that approximately 5,000 people have command over what he calls the commanding heights of the U.S. economy. But however we examine it, the data essentially reveals an enormous concentration of power. Regardless of the facade, in each and every one of our countries in this planet, the real power remains in the hands of the few. I should say that particularly with respect to the concentration of power in the hands of corporate capital, because it is that structure which allows the few to have power over the many, regardless of the facade. In the United States, the New York Times estimated recently that 0.5% of the population owns more than the rest of the population combined. The top executives of 8 companies reported the Times back in 1998 owned personally $15 billion of their company equity. This has increased by multiples in the intervening 4 years. But no matter what yardstick we use, the powerful few run the show. The government administers the state, and the rich purchase that government. The state is in reality their private instrument, which they use to police the planet and to subsidize control over planetary resources and cheap labor by corporations and banks. And it is that assessment, that analysis, that informed view of events which gives context and meaning to the specifics that we seek to describe. Whether it is the structure of Carlyle or Bioport, the government company that is now in private hands that controls anthrax vaccine, or it is the role of the National Security Agency in running Mohammed Atta and his associates in South Florida, these are but expressions of a structure of power. One headline in the New York Times read, "The rich control more of U.S. wealth as debts grow for poor." That was a description of an in-depth study prepared by the University of Michigan that shows that wealth has become more concentrated than ever before. And this analysis is constantly reinforced by the available data. If we look at the presumptive trade associations, whether they're NAFTA or Maastricht or the MAI, it's quite clear these are not trade agreements. They're strategic assaults upon the resources of the planet and the living standards of its inhabitants. Since NAFTA was imposed, global corporations centered in the United States eliminated 500,000 jobs. The wages of Mexican workers in the manufacturing sector fell 40% and were 1/11 of what had been paid for equivalent work to workers in the United States. In fact, when you look at the plants concentrated along the border where U.S. companies produce goods for the U.S. market, the Zenith plant in Reynosa is an example. They moved from Southern California to Reynosa, and they pay workers 69 cents an hour. Wages are under siege. Social services are assailed. Health care deteriorates. The cost of food and clothing soars. The housing stock dwindles to a fraction of its previous meager supply. And so when we speak of the global corporations, we're talking about a very precise system of economic control, and it's called capitalism. A few years ago, we called them multinationals. Before that, we spoke and wrote about the Trilateral Commission. But no matter the instrument through which exploitation is managed and planned, it's the control of the state by concentrated capital which makes this possible. And it doesn't really matter whether which of the two political parties, which are each financed by capital, holds nominal office, because this is office without power. The real decisions are made in different arenas, in the banking and corporate headquarters, in the secret offices of the National Security Agency, of the Central Intelligence Agency, of the Pentagon, of their various think tanks, the Council on Foreign Relations. That's where decisions are made that affect our lives. This is not a new story. Woodrow Wilson spoke of making the world safe for democracy as the rationale for entering the First World War. But when addressing the manufacturers of the United States, he was more explicit. If, he said, we do not impose our enterprise abroad, we cannot have any liberty at all in this country, for it will be a luxury we cannot afford. Our industry is at the point, said Woodrow Wilson, where it collapses unless it finds control and domination of a world market, because our home market is no longer sufficient. We must have foreign dominion. Herbert Hoover expressed the core policy of the rule of capital in parallel terms. Foreign control is more important for us to ensure the stable and normal functioning of our capitalist economy. It assumes a greater importance than home consumption. These were the identical preoccupations of Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal. Roosevelt's president of the National Industrial Conference Board, Virgil Jordan, put it like this on December 10, 1940. Whatever the outcome of the war, we have taken the road of imperialism on an economic plane as on all other planes of life. Yes, some fear this word imperialism, so well known, and to some menacing. Most people prefer to mask this under the more vague expression, defense of the Western Hemisphere. But we are destined by our need, by our capacity, by the exigencies of rule in our own society to follow this road. We have no choice but to continue as we have during the past century, which began with the seizure of this continent and proceeded to the annexation of Cuba and the Philippines. This empire must see its possibilities throughout the southern part of this hemisphere and west of the Pacific. The scepter must fall in the hands of the United States. That is the historical context of corporate rule, and that is what informs the U.S. Census Bureau report when it states that the gap between the affluent few and everyone else is wider than it has been since the end of the Second World War. But how does this work? Forbes magazine revealed 5 years ago that top corporate rulers control $3.2 trillion in business assets alone. They own 50% of all common stock in America and 55% of all fixed non-residential private capital. The conservative Cato Institute calculated at that time, and this is 4 years ago, that in every sector of our economy, the giant corporations are subsidized by the federal government. Congress finances 125 subsidy programs for the largest corporations at a net cost at that time of $85 billion a year, but that does not include the tax breaks. The top 17 corporations paid no federal income tax for a period of 10 years. Now, that statistic informs the legislative demands of the Bush regime, utilizing the disaster of September 11 as the cover for imposing, with an acquiescent Democratic Party in Congress, imposing the elimination of any taxation for the 17 largest corporations in the United States. But more than that, they are going to enjoy $150 billion total of tax breaks and subsidies going back for a decade. this is the consequence of command of the state. In agriculture, the Cato Institute calculates that the agro conglomerates receive $31.3 billion in government handouts and $2.9 billion in tax rebates. Again, this was a statistic they calculated 4 years ago. Energy corporations were subsidized to the tune of $15.3 billion. Transportation conglomerates received $30.6 billion. Aerospace and high-tech, $16.7 billion. In construction, the major corporations received $17.4 billion. Financial services, the banks, the brokerage houses, the great centers of stock and bond speculation, they received $42.3 billion, with tax breaks $60.4 billion. Commodity credit subsidies, $10 billion. These are not government programs. These are handouts to a corporate oligarchy which owns this government and finances both political parties with the proceeds. And that is why 60 cents of every tax dollar went to the Pentagon, but less than a dime to health care. That is why 3 cents are allocated to housing, and that housing for the affluent. 2 cents to education, and much of that channel to the schools, again, of the affluent. This is what permits but 1% to be allocated to generate employment. This is the structure of power, which explains why a child dies of poverty every 50 minutes in the United States, why hundreds of thousands of children are homeless each night, why 1 in 5 children in the U.S. goes to bed hungry and cold, without heat, running water, and electricity, in the rat-infested cages which pass for shelter in our inner cities. And while the health of the workers of the world is in crisis mode, what of the compensation reaped by the health conglomerates and their corporate controllers? The healthcare workers' union, SEIU Local 250, calculated and documented that Richard L. Scott of Columbia HCA received $265 million in 1 year. Peter Nicholson of Boston Scientific Corporation's salary was $231.1 million. David Jones of Humana Inc., $194.4 million. Leon C. Hirsch of U.S. Surgical, $105.8 million, and that's just the salary. Leonard Abramson of U.S. Healthcare received stock options of $11.4 million and outright stock holdings of $783.9 million. His total compensation package was $805,122,045. The total spending on AIDS by the federal government, $1.4 billion in total, was half of the value of the stock holdings of the top 10 health industry executives. As Business Week documented in its special report 4 years ago, these were across-the-board payments among corporate conglomerates. This is a structure of power which is particular to corporate capitalism. It is a system which demands continued exploitation and war to service that economy and to extend its dominion over ever-increasing arenas of natural resources and cheap labor. Thomas Friedman of the New York Times, the Hannibal Lecter of American journalists, stated, "The hidden hand of the market will never work without the hidden fist. McDonald's cannot flourish without McDonnell Douglas, the designer of VF-15. And the hidden fist that keeps the world safe for Silicon Valley technology is called the U.S. Army Air Force, Navy, and Marine Corps." Unquote. So those are the essential components of a structure of rule which give meaning to the events that we are seeking to describe and explain and document in Taking Aim. and our purpose is to arm you, brothers and sisters, with information, with knowledge, and with the wherewithal to mobilize, to organize the fight back against a rapacious system that feeds upon the starvation and the misery of the many and of the mass of, the, of humanity.
We hope that you will reach us and contact us with ideas, comments, and share with us your opinions. You can reach us at Veritas9, that's V-E-R-I-T-A-S-9, at Pacbell, P-A-C-B-E-L-L .net, or write to us at Veritas, V-E-R-I-T-A-S, Press, that's our publication house, P.O. Box 6345, Vallejo, V-A-L-L-E-J-O, California, 94591. Some of you have written to us. We really appreciate it. Some of you have telephoned us, and we appreciate that, too. We heard, by the way, from someone who lives in Montreal, and we heard from an Iranian exile in Norway. And the person from Montreal called because he had heard one of our programs on his way home after Christmas, and he and his wife were so taken with the program that they stopped by the side of the road to hear the complete program. And what we told him is that you can hear Taking Aim on the Internet, and that's how it was heard in Norway, at www.wbai.org, that's O-R-G, and you go to the Listen section, and you can get a free download with a real player. So we want to thank all of you who are listening.